This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. And it's been an amazing Friday with so many questions done, so many more to get to. The weekend is upon us. So let's dig into this one here. Hey, Jesse, I'm curious your thoughts. The subject of this one is ROE for Border Patrol. That's rules of engagement for you civilian types. Hey, Jesse, just curious your thoughts on allowing Border Patrol to start firing on people if they don't obey commands to not enter at non-ports of entry. If you're given a direct order to turn back and proceed to the port of entry and you continue on your path across the border, should we fire warning shots, so on and so forth? What are your thoughts? His name is Anthony. Well, this is one of those stances that I take that gets all kinds of complaints to the show and corporate. Remember, if you want to whine or complain, you're welcome to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 877-377-4373. So I'll go ahead and say it again as clear as day. Unless deadly force is part of your security, you don't actually have security. Period. End of story. It has to be on your list or you don't have security. I used the example before. It was a few weeks ago, but I used the example before of you want to come into my home and you want to steal my ice maker. And I don't blame you for that. I can tell you no. But unless I'm willing to do violent things to stop you, then if you really want to, you can do it. Violence has to be an option. I can even stand there at the front door. Hey, don't come in. Don't come in. But if you want to, and I've decided that violence is off the table, absolutely not. I'll never lay a hand on you. If you come in my home, I won't kill you. I don't do violence. If I have that stance, then I don't actually have security. What I have is you, meaning your value system. I have to bank entirely on your value system if I take violence off the table. Why is there a big bouncer with 17-inch biceps at the local club you're trying to get into? Why? Because it has to be understood that there is security, and if you try to come through the security when you're not allowed, violence will be visited upon you. Deadly force should absolutely be on the table for Border Patrol agents, because without that, you're banking on the value system of the people coming into the country. And you can't bank on that. They've already shown they're willing to violate our laws. Of course, they're just going to sidestep you. You can't come out and say things, well, we're not going to harm anybody. Well, we're not going to. Of course not. Without violence, there's no real security. Period. I'll tell you this, even in the Marines, there are places on base where they store ammunition and dangerous things, explosive things. And you would have to go guard those places on occasion, depending on if you got that detail or whatnot. And we were not given live rounds to cruise around the base with. So don't think that that's the case. You'll have your weapon out to train, but you have to check it out. No real live rounds unless you're out in the field. Then you check it back in. But when you had to go guard, let's call it an ammo depot of some kind, you are not only given a weapon, you are given live rounds, and it is made crystal clear to you. Obviously, there are steps you take as far as calling out warnings and things like that, and you would want that. You don't just want to blast away. But You have the authority, no matter what, as a young Marine, as a PFC, as a private. I don't care if that's a full bird colonel trying to get past you into the ammo depot. If he doesn't have the authority to do so, then you are allowed to kill him, and you are given live ammunition as you are standing there, period. Because they understood, without the threat of violence, without violence being on the menu, it has to be one of the steps. Now, you want it to be the last step, right? Because it is the last step. But without it being one of the steps, you don't have security. Of course you should be able to fire. Well, Border Patrol, I should say, should be able to fire upon people coming into the country illegally. Every country in the history of the world would acknowledge that's basic border security. And countries around the world still secure their border exactly this way, and they should. Go ahead and try to break into Egypt. If you're in Palestine, go ahead and break into Egypt. See what happens. They'll fire you and leave your stinking body right by the wall. Not even a hesitation. Nope, not welcome. You want to die? Has to be done. Jesse, where is all this communist activity coming from and who is funding it? Russia, China, Soros, etc.? Well, this is there's a long history to this, and I'm not going to do all of it. Obviously, I'll do just a little bit of it here. I expand on this a lot more in my book, but the one I already wrote, don't worry, I didn't write another book. The Anti-Communist Manifesto, I kind of go over some of this, but there have been a lot of great books on it, but obviously not just mine. First, remember, communism coming to the United States of America was brought here originally on purpose by the Soviets. We were at war with the Soviet Union. This was, honestly, pre-World War II, this stuff was happening. The communists, after their revolution in the Soviet Union, they knew that this big free market country of America was going to be a problem for them. Remember, they wanted communism to be for the entire world. It was never just supposed to be for Russia. It was workers of the world united. It was supposed to be for everyone. Everyone has to subject to it. And they brought it here on purpose with the unions, teachers' unions, journalism, all the stuff you would think, trying everything they could to get a foothold here. And they were successful enough that, well, what's the best way I can describe it? Okay, here's a good example. Here's a good example. I want you to picture a seed, sunflower seed. You know what sunflowers are and all the seeds they produce. The original sunflower was the Soviet Union. But it wasn't just here they were trying to get communism in. They were trying to put it in everywhere they could find it. France, they were very, very successful in France and other places. And what they were doing was they were dropping sunflower seeds in these places. And so we'll focus on us for the time being. They dropped the sunflower seed of communism here. And then, of course, the Soviet Union ends up going down and the wall falls and all those other things. And we think communism was defeated. Communism was not defeated. The Soviet Union was defeated. They had already planted the seed here. And now most of our communism, not all, because a lot of it's funded by dirty foreigners, but most of our communism is actually homegrown. American communists raising and nurturing other communists. This happens a lot in the university system of this country. These are communists. And I'm not overstating this, honestly. Go read the book and borrow it from a friend if you don't have money. I'm not trying to get you to buy my book. I'm really not. It's fine. I'm fine. Don't worry about that. Borrow it from someone where I outline committed communists, like Weather Underground communists, who were trying to blow people up and have a communist revolution. And in most ways, really in every way, they failed at that. But they didn't fail and just get locked in a cage forever. Many of them failed and then went right into the university system where they are still teaching Aiden, Jaden, and Braden to this day about the greatness of communism and the evils of America. America now raises and nurtures its own communists. Originally, it was brought here by the Soviet Union. That sunflower came in, bleep, bleep, bleep. That's the sound the seeds make, bleep, bleep, bleep. Dropped a couple seeds. Soviet Union eventually fell, but those seeds still grew. And now We have homegrown communists, a lot of them here in this country, and it's going to take a lot of work getting them out. I mean, they sit on the Supreme Court, for Pete's sake.
Cannot eliminate the risk of detransitioners. So it becomes a pure exercise of weighing benefits versus risk. And the question of how many minors have to have their bodies irreparably harmed for unproven benefits is one that is best left.
I'm sorry, Counselor. Every medical treatment has a risk. Even taking aspirin.
That's the communist who sits on the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Her name's Sonia Sotomayor. That's her comparing chopping a teenage girl's breasts off to taking an aspirin. Now we raise our own, we nurture our own, and now it makes it harder because it's internal. Okay? All right. Somebody wants to know a little bit about history, some of my favorite military leaders. That's fun. Hang on.
Feeling a little stocky?
Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 877-377-4373. Dear promoter of the knee sleeve industrial complex, I'll have you know, my knee sleeve has been very effective. It has, Chris. It's been amazing. Listen, whenever I would work out, do like lunges or squats or deadlifts or something like that, my left knee would be so stiff for the rest of the day. No, it's not because I'm 85, Chris. Anyway, I got this knee sleeve. Everyone kept saying, try these knee sleeves out, and I have no idea why it works, but I use that. Worked like a charm. Granted, Bob is not thrilled that I walk through the neighborhood with the knee sleeve on and shorts on. She says it looks dorky and stuff like that, but it's very, very effective. Jesse, my son is in his last year of high school. Recently, they did a project in a history class to rank and explain their top five military leaders of all time. There are plenty of legitimate names you could put in a top five list, but my son decided to put Hannibal in the number five spot. To his dismay, the history teacher... No way. To his dismay, the history teacher had never even heard of him and had to look him up. Is this embarrassing for him, or is this just what they have for history teachers now? And he says, I'm wondering who you, as a fellow wobbly-kneed history nerd, would rank as your top five military leaders of all time. His name is Ryan. There's no way that's true, right? A history teacher doesn't know who Hannibal Barca was? No way. I guess there's... I have no reason... This guy wouldn't lie. Why would the guy lie? So I guess I'll go ahead and take him at his word. One, man, that is sad. That is truly sad. Hannibal Barca... is maybe, you don't want to ever say anything for sure because who knows, but tactically, probably the greatest general who ever lived. Tactically. Remember, tactics and strategies are two different things. And this is, let me lay it out like this, because if we're going to talk generals and military leaders, you kind of have to separate the two. If you're strategically the greatest military commander of all time, it's probably Genghis Khan. Genghis, why? Because he planned and organized these huge invasions involving different armies going in from different directions. That's strategy. Strategically is, we're going to send an army sweeping in through the north, and this other army is going to go through the Gobi Desert. That's strategic thinking, okay? Tactic thinking, tactically is... Okay, your army's over there, my army's over here, we're about to have a fight, and I see that your left flank is weak, so I'm going to put my cavalry on the left because I'm going to have them charge into your left flank, which will hopefully have them collapse and roll up the rest. That's tactics, okay? Strategy and tactics are different things. And remember, you need different kinds of generals for different things, which makes this conversation a really fun and interesting debate. And when I give you some of mine, I'll get a bunch of emails disagreeing, and that's totally fun. I love that. The history debates and stuff like that is amazing. I would probably put Hannibal number two. Genghis Khan's number one. Well, I'll put it to you this way. In ancient times, get this. Think how cool this was. At one point, Scipio Africanus, the Roman general, the one who eventually defeated Hannibal, there's a record of this, those two legends, legendary generals in their own right, they could both be on that list, they had an argument over who they thought were the greatest military leaders of all time back then. How cool, what would you have given to be a fly on the wall to hear that conversation? You know who both of them had on their list? Tell me, this is wild. Somebody you don't even think of. Pyrrhus, or Pyrrhus, depending on how you pronounce it. You know who Pyrrhus was? Or Pyrrhus? You ever heard of a Pyrrhic victory? You've never heard of a Pyrrhic victory, Chris? Chris said he went to public school. Okay. All right, let's have a little lesson for Chris. Whenever you hear somebody say it was a Pyrrhic victory, it means you won in the short term, but winning in the short term was so costly that you will lose in the end. Pyrrhus was a Greek general. He fought the Romans and beat the crap out of the Romans. But Pyrrhus, if you're looking up, it's P-Y-R, okay, Pyrrhus. Anyway, he was this incredible Greek general who would beat the crap out of the Romans whenever he fought them, but he didn't have enough reinforcement troops, and so he would fight and he would win, but he would lose so many troops in the process, in the end, he couldn't withstand the losses. So yes, the battle itself was won, but in the end, he lost the war because the battle was so costly. That's called, like, if you're a boxer and you come out one round and you beat the living crap out of the guy you're fighting against, but you don't knock him out, and in so doing, you gash yourself out so you can't lift your arms up anymore. And then he comes out and he beats you up in the next round and wins the fight. That first round where you won, that was a Pyrrhic victory. It was great for you, but the fighting of the battle cost it. So anyway, back to Hannibal and Scipio Africanus. Those two both agreed that Pyrrhus was on that list. Most people don't even know who Pyrrhus was. Jewish producer Chris didn't even know who he was. So there are names on that list that are interesting. Anyway, this is an interesting conversation. I'll touch on it a little bit more, then we'll go back to modern politics and the GOP and other stuff. First, you're probably going to need to get some chalk in you for this conversation, because this conversation is for men and women. Actually, women love this stuff too. But ladies, there's good news. Chalk has female vitality stacks too. Everyone knows by now chalk, natural herbal supplements, that it'll raise your T levels up a lot, not a little, a lot. 20% in 90 days is insane. That's what the male vitality stack can do for you, gentlemen. It'll change your friggin' life. But ladies, there's a female vitality stack for you. You're not forgotten, not left out. You want to feel great all day. You want to stop running out of gas at 3-4 in the afternoon, needing that extra energy drink or a cup of coffee. Go to chok.com. They're running a big special the month of December. Huge discounts on subscriptions, plus a $50 bonus product on your first delivery. Chok.com, promo code Jesse. chok.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't
shoot at the United States. Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah. America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. So, greatest military commanders of all time. Genghis Khan's number one in my book. Hannibal is number two in my book. And when it comes to generals, to be honest, your top 10, like three or four should probably be Genghis Khan's generals. Subadai, Genghis Khan's really his supreme military commander for the most part, Subadai. Subadai probably stands on his own as one of the great generals of all time. There's a book, I told you about it before, very, very short book, but you will love it. You will geek out. If you're a history nerd, you will geek out on it. Chris, make sure I'm right about this. I think it's called Subadai the Valiant. Subadai the Valiant, I think it is. Oh, gosh, it's so good. Subadai, I should clarify, S-U-B. S-U-B is what you need to be looking. That's how it starts, Subadai. And I think it's A-T-A-I. But sometimes when people say things on the radio, it used to frustrate me when I was trying to nerd out on something. I couldn't tell exactly what they were saying or how to look it up. S-U-B. Subadai. Anyway, Chris will get me the exact name of the book. It's a really great book. Subadai. No. Subadai wouldn't be third. I know you're probably screaming at the radio about Alexander the Great, so I should probably make him third. I should clarify why he's not number one for me. For me. Alexander the Great was incredible in every way. And the fact that the historical people, the Romans, all those people, they all thought he was the best. Like that conversation I was just telling you about between Scipio Africanus and Hannibal, they both agreed Alexander the Great's number one. So obviously we have to give that a lot of credence. They're more contemporaries of his than we are. But the reason he's third on my list is this: Alexander the Great's father, Philip II, was an incredible military conqueror and builder of the Macedonian Empire. His father, Philip II, defeated virtually all of the other Greek city-states and unified one gigantic Greece, completely reformed their army into being a juggernaut, and he had already established a foothold over in the Persian Empire. He was already planning on an invasion when he got assassinated. Someone slipped a dagger between his ribs at a wedding. It was a big, big old hubbub thing, as you can imagine. But this is not to take away from Alexander the Great, who was absurdly brave and tactically was amazing. He was all those things. He really was propped up to be this. In Subadai the Valiant, I knew I was right. Subadai the Valiant is the name of the book. Alexander the Great really was destined for it. Like, today, you want to know how I know I'm getting old? I know I'm getting old.
Why are you so old?
I'm starting to get back into baseball again more and more as I soured on the other professional sports I used to love. I'm starting to enjoy baseball more and more. The patriotism of it is better. It's a better family environment. I'm that old guy now. I'm starting to get back into baseball a lot. And you know what's difficult about it? I am now watching the sons of the players I grew up watching. When I was a child, I grew up rooting for Dante Bichette. His son, Bo Bichette, plays in the majors. When I was a kid, we used to go in the backyard. Because that was back when kids played outside. We used to go in the backyard and we would have these wiffle ball tournaments where you had to have the batting stance and swing of your favorite players, and you would pick your favorite players. I'm Frank Thomas and I'm Ken Griffey Jr. We pitched to each other and things like that. When I was a kid,
I used to bat all the time as Vladimir Guerrero. You know who one of the best hitters in baseball is now? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'm having to watch his son fly. Anyway, but think about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s life, and I don't know anything about him, and I'm not certainly not bad-mouthing him at all or anything like that. Maybe a wonderful guy or a bad guy, I don't know. But think about how he grew up. Think about the tutelage. I grew up as a young man on construction sites. When I saw my dad at work, it was during construction. No matter what, it was construction. That was my upbringing. Vladimir Guerrero grew up in Major League Baseball clubhouses getting tutoring and schooling from the greatest baseball players on the planet. That's not being dismissive of the hard work I'm sure he had to put in to rise to the level of being a Major League Baseball player, but I think we can all acknowledge that's a fairly big advantage. It's not an accident the Manning brothers and everyone in that family seems to be a great quarterback and goes to the NFL. The one of them is now currently at Texas. Think what it's like for him sitting down at Thanksgiving. He's got Archie Manning, Peyton Manning, and Eli Manning while you and I are screwing off in the backyard playing playing football games in the backyard at Thanksgiving. He's getting expert tutelage on this is how you drop back. Again, so back to Alexander the Great, not taking anything away from him. His father was a beast, an absolute beast, and really put him on third base. Yeah, he did great with it, but one of those born on third base things. Jesse, I'm from Mississippi, and we have a GOP Senator Wicker who desperately needs to be primaried out of the Senate. Yes, he does. We had a great candidate last time, but unfortunately the entrenchment was too deep. Why don't we select a broadly disliked GOP senator like Lindsey Graham, for whose opponent it should be easier to raise a lot of cash? I'm not wealthy, but I would send money to a good candidate worthy of taking Lindsey's seat. Well, I touched on this yesterday, and we will touch on this a lot because this is something that I'm going to focus on a lot on this show, is defeating GOP senators in blood red states in their primaries. But I'm gonna tell you right now, it's going to be hard. You know that. And it's going to probably take us some time. Because as I laid out, to defeat an incumbent senator, it is going to require one guy, not a crowded field. That's usually what happens. You get four or five guys challenging the main guy. It has to be one guy. And that one guy not only has to be good, he has to be an anti-communist like us. He has to be able to raise money on his own. And I know you're thinking, well, we'll raise him money. Yeah, I will help. Obviously, you will help. We'll help. We're talking $30, $40 million. That's probably a bare minimum of what it's going to take. At least 20. $20, $30, $40 million is probably what it's going to take to face off against an established GOP senator and defeat him in a primary. Don't think that that's too daunting, though. There are plenty of guys out there that can do it. There are governors who can do it. There are state AGs who can do it. Sitting congressmen have access to some of those networks and can do it. There are established people who can do this. I'm not saying it's impossible at all. But those are the things we have to have in place if we're going to defeat a GOP senator. It's not enough here. We'll make it about me in my state because you know how much I hate John Cornyn. Everyone knows. It's not enough to just say I hate John Cornyn or we're sick of John Cornyn. That's a good start. I like that we're there. That's a good start. Oh, Chris said Cornyn spent $36 million in 2020. Yep. That you don't have to match him, but you're going to have to raise 15, 20. So I hate John Cornyn. You hate John Cornyn. We want to defeat John Cornyn, whether you're in Texas or not. That's a good place. That's a necessary step one. I'm not dismissive of that. But if we're going to defeat him in 2026, it's going to require someone who's established, who most people in the Texas GOP already know, and it's going to require somebody who has the ability to raise $15 million, $20 million. Now, don't send me any emails. I don't want an email from you saying, we got to get the money out of politics. Stop. That's childish thinking. You can't get the money out of politics, no matter how hard you try. You could go back to ancient history. Money has always been in politics, always will.
You can wish that all day long. Wish in one hand, crap in the other, and see which one fills up first, as my dad used to tell me all the time. So we have to have someone who can raise money, period. We'll focus on that. I don't hate your idea about picking one. We're going to have to pick one who has the primary challenger I was just talking about. And where that's going to come from, I don't know. Maybe it'll be Oklahoma. Maybe it will be Texas. Maybe it'll be South Carolina, South Dakota. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Mississippi. But we can try. You, I want you to go get a hold of Done For You Real Estate for me. Because hard assets are the future. You know what China is doing? Have you heard what China's doing when it comes to their trade with other nations? China, lots of times, they're taking hard assets instead of their currency. China understands the world economy, and they're gobbling up hard assets because that's what lasts through it. Done For You Real Estate will find you the best properties in the best markets. They vet everything for you. They get the financing done for you. They handle the closing for you. They handle the rental process for you. It's for normal people to begin investing in real estate. Just check them out and see what they do. That's all I'm asking. Check them out. Go to doneforyoujesse.com. Doneforyoujesse.com. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, where you can send us emails, leave us voicemails. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. A voicemail is 877-377-4373.
Why does our government keep paying people extra money that don't pay taxes? They'll pay in $1,000 and get back $10,000. Why do they do that?
Because that's how you get elected, by sticking your fat, greedy fingers into the treasury, grabbing a wad of cash, and throwing it to the masses. It's always been that way, always will be that way. It's freaking awful. I hate it.
Hey, Jesse, Vanilla Cream Kelly, when you sample Chris's hot, stinky, trash, homemade mustard, you going to suck it off the hot dog like Kamala Harris, or you just going to take the whole thing like Pete Buttigieg? I'm just wondering. And stop breaking everything you get from GovX, man. Next, it's going to be the daggum knee sleeve.
I hate you guys. We all know Chris's mustard is going to suck. I know it. I didn't even tell you the update on what he dropped on me after the show was over, because we're going to do a mustard taste test. Of course, Chris is using his own. I'm sure it's to save money. He's making his own. He drops this on me and Corey when the show's over. By the way, what did he say, Corey? It has to ferment for a month or something like that. He's trying to filibuster the mustard taste test. That's exactly what you're doing, Chris. What? Chris, no one wants to hear your excuses. He just said if you get it too fresh, it's too green. Oh, Chris, you know what? That's fine. You know who's not going to forget? The listeners. You know what? The month starts now. A month from now, when we get back from New Year's and Christmas and all that stuff, I expect to have the mustard taste test ready. We'll see. I'm going to give you a fair shake. I am. Chris, I'm going to be blindfolded, okay? It's going to be completely fair. I will. And make sure we get the good wieners, too. The ballpark bun size ones. No, we're not getting Hebrew. We're not getting Hebrew Nationals, Chris. Okay, they're overrated. No, everyone knew you were going to shill for your people. No. Ballpark, bun size. We'll get beef. You people can eat those. See? What? You can? You can't? Oh, yeah, I guess it isn't kosher. Well, I tried. Hey, Jesse, I listen. I listen to an Enjoy Your Show Every Evening delayed broadcast, 9 to midnight. Dang, that's brutal. On WXJB FM 99.9. I like your trademark comment, that's all, at the end of every show. Now I was wondering how you came to close your show with Slow Ride from the 1975 Fool for the City album by Foghat. Maybe it's a warning to road rage drivers, and there are plenty of them. Stay well and Merry Christmas. Chris, we've been doing Slow Ride to intro the last segment for years, right? What? How did we? It's always been the outro from day one. I think you did that, didn't you? I think Jewish producer Chris came up to that. Chris said it was day one. I knew it was old because we've been doing radio 6 years. I knew it was old
When we first started doing the show, you'll never even be able to find these tapes. I'm sure it was awful. But the start of the show was not the song you hear now, which is Highway Tune by Greta Van Fleet. When we first did it, it was that Foghat song, I Just Want to Make Love to You was the name of that song. And that song's pretty average, but the intro to it, the opening, is sick. And that was the opening. And so I think from that, you made Slow Ride the exit to the show. So it was actually Chris came up with that. Yeah, that's day one. Wow. Gosh. Man, what a blast in the past. Jesse, Chris, and Corey, don't ask these guys anything. I just saw on X that Genghis Khan had 2,000 people at his funeral. I knew that nobody knew where he was buried, and they changed the direction of the river, yada, yada. But he supposedly had 2,000 people killed, and then somebody else killed the executioners. What in the world? I can't believe it. Is it true? All right. Is it true? I'm gonna burst your bubble maybe a little bit on a few things, okay? When it comes to Genghis Khan and many other things, I'll get to them in a moment. When it comes to Genghis Khan, his quotes, his battles, his things like that, a lot of the details come from very shaky sources. Oh, we know Genghis Khan was real. We know about the conquest, and there was enough written history back then. He was this amazing Mongolian general, invented all these other things. We know all those other things are true. The high points of Genghis Khan's life, we know are true. But what's the a great quote? Here's one of Genghis Khan's great quotes is, "I am the flail of God. If you had not committed great sins, God would never have sent a punishment like me upon you." It's also sometimes quoted as the scourge of God, flail of God. They're both ways. What, Chris? What? Chris, I have to say something else. Chris is begging me not to ruin it. We don't know that he ever said that. It comes from one source that's fairly shaky. His entire background with his childhood, where he shot his brother with arrows and then was an outcast. And that stuff is likely true from what we know, but we don't know. No, unless you're reading about a society where they were meticulous about writing everything down. The ancient Chinese, granted that scumbag Mao destroyed a lot of that history, but if you're reading ancient Chinese history, they wrote down every freaking thing. You can probably bank on that more. Roman history, the Romans kept records of everything, mind-numbing records. If it's oral history, remember the Mongols, they were just a nomadic people in the Asian steppe. They weren't exactly scholars jotting everything down. We don't know about a lot. We don't know, no. The stories we tell, it is the, I'll use this word for it, it's the accepted history. There's a lot of history we know that may not be exactly how it happened. And vice versa. Remember, there's mountains and mountains and mountains. We know just the tip of history. Just the tippy tip of it. There's an entire history realm that we will never know until we get to heaven and ask God about it. We will never know. And the reason we only get just the tip, that's just the tip that got written down. It's the tip of the iceberg. You've ever seen one of those pictures where just the tip is sticking out of the water and there's this huge iceberg beneath it? That's you and me with our knowledge of history. That's how it is. All right, we have more. Let's talk about calling your senators and reps. All that and a lot more fun coming up next hour.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.